BerkeleySound.com.
Berkeley Sound.
Great.
The Troubadour Tapes.
I had a goose and the goose pleased me.
Bang down, you hit the doodly.
A woman's only human.
One less set of footsteps on your floor.
Never saw my hometown till I stayed away.
The Troubadour Tapes.
Hi, welcome to the San Diego Troubadour Tapes podcast. My name is Jeff Berkeley. On this podcast, we take the subject of an article in the San Diego Troubadour magazine and pair them up with the writer of that article, and we let them do the interview here at Berkeley Sound Studios. That way you can kind of hear the interaction of the artist and the interviewer and, truthfully, anyone else who happens to be in the room. This time we have Tim Mudd as our interviewer and Josh D'Amigo as our artist. Liz Abbott, the editor of the San Diego Troubadour magazine, is here as well. And I may even chime in from time to time. So relax and check out this really interesting interview about Josh D'Amigo. He's really a hard worker, a good songwriter and a good entertainer, but there's lots of those. What Josh has is spirit and drive and passion. And,
Josh D'Amigo, any last words before I unnecessarily slay you in an intellectual battle of wits?
No, but I like the pain. Bring the pain, Tim. Bring the pain.
How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, very well. Very well. So, the title of this article is Knocking on a Million Doors.
The title of the whole issue is going to be that.
All right. I like that. I like that.
Are you shooting for 2 million now?
You have to shoot for the next step. I mean, really, it's about working hard. I like that. That's good.
All right. So, let's just start from the beginning. What made you want to be an artist?
I honestly never really thought of music as a career for me. I was a sports guy, and then I tore my ACL, MCL, and meniscus in college, and that was the end of my sports career. And so, I mean, I was literally sitting on a couch watching like the World Cup or something like that, and I was getting all bummed out, and I picked up my buddy's guitar and just started writing, and someone said, "Hey, that's pretty good. You should go to an open mic." I didn't know what an open mic was, and then I finally went and sat in on a couple. Actually, that's where I met you, and from there, it just kind of happened. It really went from just showing up to open mics to playing, big gigs, so it's fun.
So and I think that's what we really want to get into when you say it just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't just...
Well, it seemed like it happened because that one year you kind of popped out of nowhere,
right,
and won all the Hat Awards.
The Hat Awards, yeah. I mean, and I'm sure that we'll get into Knocking on a Million Doors, but when you just love what you're doing, it kind of just happens. I mean, you don't really notice all the work that you put into it. So,
no one can actually doubt your out and out visibility in San Diego over the last few years, the last 4 or 5 years, really. You're obviously comfortable with your ability at networking, both in person and socially. Now, did this evolve naturally, or was there a master plan behind the execution of it?
I'm the kind of guy that has a lot of... I just go out and do things. When I was in high school, I did, band. I played the tuba and the baritone in the band. I was a sports guy. I was the captain of the basketball team, baseball team, soccer team. And then I was on student council. I was the vice president. I did every event at the church that I went to. I mean, I really was just active all the time. I guess it's sort of an ADD lifestyle, is that you just kind of keep doing. And when I don't have much to do, I really get bored and I just kind of sit at home and watch TV. It's kind of unfulfilling, I guess. So for me, networking isn't so much something that I had to work at. It's just something I naturally do. I love meeting people, and I think that that's probably one of a really good quality about me is that I have the ability to just go and just talk to anybody and you know, introduce myself and tell them what I do. So
the medium really isn't important. It's the actual act of doing it. It's one theory, but you can just apply it.
Yeah.
Whether it's for a, you know, for a council, or whether it's, you know, for a sports career, or whether it's for music, or whatever it is, it's the same basic rules.
Yeah, you just go at it. I mean, you know, I kind of just applied the same thing I've always done. It's just being outgoing and talkative. And I mean, you know, I was raised by women, so I probably have the same amount of verbal words that I have to say per day as most women do, and so
that's why.
If I don't get out and say all my words during the day, I go home and I'm, you know, upset, and I'm cooking dinner for myself and listening to Whitney Houston.
Wow.
Yeah, my roommate caught me doing that yesterday. It's awkward.
Any particular stage in Whitney Houston's career?
Yeah, well, it's even worse when I tell you what song it was. But it's kind of from
Don't tell me it was from The Bodyguard.
Yeah, actually, it was. Our eyes locked, and he kind of said, "Are you really eating dinner by yourself in the dark listening to Whitney Houston?" And I was like, "Yes, I am."
Wow.
Yeah, he forgave me. He told me he wouldn't tell anybody, but apparently I'm telling everyone, so it's no big deal. Pretty sure I tweeted it right away.
I'm also writing an article on social networking for the April issue.
What's
of
that?
The Troubadour.
I'm just kidding.
Well, you just have to read the article. Now, this is an ever-evolving media, but it seems as though you've used it very much to your advantage. How has this helped?
Well, you know, really, I guess I've always been good with technology. I grew up in San Jose, which is, you know, Silicon Valley, and at, you know, 4 or 5 years old, I was, you know, jumping on PCs and playing video games and Prodigy and this and that. So social networking for me is always, like, I'm always excited to meet, you know, find a new, you know, network to meet people. Now, one of the things like Facebook or Twitter or MySpace, when those popped up, you know, I really kind of ran with it.
So if you're listening and you're looking for good tips on how to get your name out there like Josh D'Amigo has been able to do, notice what he said there. He said that because of the way he grew up, social networking was real easy for him and quick and something that was part of his nature. And that's a real key. You got to do the things that make sense to you. Use the tools you have and use the stuff that you know to get the same results. You can go out and get people excited about your stuff in all sorts of ways.
The way that music is evolving, the way that it's changing with you know, Napster taking over and records, it's really not a game where you can be like this huge rock star and nobody gets to know you. And so for me, social networking is a way for me to talk to people and really make them get involved with what I'm doing, whether it's naming my guitar or, you know, showing everybody that I can cook. You know, it's like just a way that people get to know me better and I get to know them better. It's not uncommon for me to go and like, you know, 20 pictures of random people that I've never met, but we're just friends on Facebook because I like to be involved in their lives and they like to be involved in mine. And I think that that's probably the biggest way that social networking has helped me is that I get to be friends with people that enjoy my music. And that, I think, is so fulfilling that I think without social networking, I probably wouldn't like music very much because I really like to know people, know their stories. Why do they like this song? Why are they coming to my shows? And it's interesting to me that I get to do that through the different social networks that pop up.
So it's about fostering relationships.
Yeah.
And not necessarily just about getting up on stage and shouting at people.
Why? I don't think there's any benefit to playing a gig to a bunch of strangers, you know, that are just coming to hear, you know, a couple songs. I want to know people. I want to get involved with them. I want, you know, to be the soundtrack of their lives, and maybe they'll inspire me to write something that, you know, I got into it because of, you know, a song called Lullaby by Sean Mullins, which is like my favorite song of all time. and he wrote it at Genghis Cohen talking to a girl after a gig. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's just always been my attitude, is that like you never know where inspiration's going to strike, and hearing the lives of other people is where the stories come from. That's, I guess, where I get my ideas, and so people are just interesting to me. I like it. I don't know if I answered any of your questions.
No, you did.
Oh, cool.
You did very well, actually. I'm just
losing the battle of wits, sucker.
Oh, interesting.
Some people see that whole extra work, you know, with the Twitter and everything is sort of a big bother. So it's cool when somebody's like really gung-ho about it.
Well, and actually I had the conversation with Jane Louie last night on this topic. She's somebody came up as she and I were talking. He's like, hey, you were so good tonight. And she's like, oh, thank you. And he was like, can I get your CD? Can I do all this? And he walks away and she goes, you know, man, this is really tough. I don't like talking to people like after a gig. It's really awkward. And I'm like, no, you're great at it. You know, you're perfect. This is what you have to do to get ahead. I mean, we're all hustling, and you know, and it's, if you enjoy the, I basically told her you have to take the compliments and enjoy the people that enjoy you. And she was really cool about it. And then we tweeted some pictures. So that was that's what we did. I mean, I think that San Diego is the perfect place because everybody's so approachable and everybody's so great to talk to. It's an exciting city. I like it.
So, hey, I have a question. I'm sorry.
Can yes, sir.
Ask real quick?
Oh, that's me chiming in from the control room on the talkback mic. That may happen once or twice.
Josh, are you noticing at your gigs actually people that wouldn't have showed up unless they got a Facebook post or a tweet from you?
Yes, I think that it's very interesting that there's a lot of people that you know, go. I'll send out an event invite, and then I'll shoot an email to remind them about the event. And you know, sometimes other people are invited. They're like, "Who's Josh D'Amigo?" And suddenly now they're getting a personalized email from me, and so they email me back, and then I just start a conversation. You know, and it's interesting to me to see how many of them come based solely on the fact that, you know, oh, this guy's a rock star. He's open for all these big names, but he also has time to talk to me. And that's like a really cool thing to have someone come up after the show and say, hey, you know, thank you so much for emailing me. I thought that was the coolest thing. So that's, I mean, yeah, the long way to answer your question is, yeah, people show up based solely on the fact that I'll talk to them. It's really interesting.
It seems to be the consensus when I ask other people that, because I've been doing it at our gigs, and it's really making a difference. In fact, a lot more people pay attention to what they get on Facebook or Twitter, and whereas they're deleting emails because they get so many emails on it, they've already just passed that part of it there.
Our attention span is, you know, what, 30 seconds? You watch a commercial and you get bored if it's not funny, if it's not, you know, something doesn't pop out at you. So usually a three-sentence email on Facebook that gets to the point right away is way more productive and it'll do more than a, you know, 17 paragraph 1 month email, and it's more personal, and it's all that stuff. But Jeffrey, most people come to your show because you're the best in San Diego, so don't even do that. So
yeah, you know, you already got the gig.
He knows the first time I decided I was going to go play was because I saw him open for Three Dog Night, and he knows that was one of the reasons I said, hey, I could do this. So
I'm so sorry,
man. No, I signed up for your guys' email list, and then
did we contact you?
No. And then I...
So you learned how not to do social networking.
So I said, okay. That's so funny.
Well, so just the last follow-up to what I just asked you. Do you think, over the years, we established when you first got here that I'm older than you. Over the years, I watched email come into the picture, but when I first started, we were actually sending out, back in the dark ages, we sent out, you know, handbills with stamps that we were licking ourselves for our mailing list. Then email came in, and slowly but surely, that was incredible. And now I've watched that kind of take a dive as far as how much people are using it to promote their shows. Do you think that Facebook and Twitter and those will eventually run their course and there'll be another way of doing it? Or do you think this is the way it's going to be for... I mean, we saw MySpace. What happened to that, you know?
Yeah. I could give you a very long answer to that.
Yeah, there's a few different theories. I mean, if you watch The Social Network, you can see that the whole idea behind Facebook is to keep it cool and to keep it living while, you know, things are going on. But I think that, you know, even the other ways to do things haven't really completely died. I still send Christmas cards out to my street team that I write, you know, handwrite and send them out. And then I still send out the email. I think that really the most successful artists are the ones ones that can do it all.
That's our second Josh D'Amigo tip for the podcast. Let's hear it again.
I think that really the most successful artists are the ones that can do it all.
Makes sense, right?
And that's why you see, you know, the major labels, they have all of, you know, they have people just assigned to simply do everything in different, you know, aspects. Someone's running their Facebook, someone's running their Twitter, someone's running their MySpace. I got 3 emails this morning on MySpace that I responded to that were personalized, you know, so it's, yeah, I think that it's going to be all of these things plus whatever new, you know, phenoms come out soon. And the million dollar question is what's going to be the next thing. And if we can, one of us can figure it out right now, I will buy into whatever company you guys want.
I've actually given up the sport of social media prediction.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can't, I mean, there are what's so interesting, just quick aside, mm-hmm. when I was researching this, which, you know, I didn't have to do too much, but when I was researching all the other areas of social media, you know, there's over 75 different platforms around the world. You know, it's just the certain ones that we use geographically in San Diego.
Yeah.
And it really could be any of those that come out of the woodwork. The only thing it depends on is the interest and the love and attention that each individual user collectively grows within their networking. I mean, that's what it takes.
Yeah, and I mean, and honestly, you got to be as many places as possible. I'm on Bebo, which, right. you know, you are probably the only one in here that might even know what Bebo right. is. Ping FM, mm-hmm. you know, SoundCloud, mm-hmm. all these ones that are coming yeah. out that are like,
but they're not coming. It's not that they're coming out, and that's the interesting thing. Yeah. In San Diego, we have 6 major social networks that we use. In everything, not just music, but just totally. You know, it's Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, LinkedIn, MySpace,
Flickr.
And no, not Flickr. Actually, that's a bit lower. And I'm missing the.
It's probably a really good one.
Did I say Facebook already?
No. Yes, you did.
I did.
But
okay.
I think that's listed twice.
Yeah, we listed it twice because it's so
but,
good.
But there are so many out there, and it's all done. Like, Russia has an amazing group of social networks. Japan has their own one, you know, Europe. And it's also, to make it even more complicated, it goes on age, you know, the age demographic, you know, what the kids are using versus what their parents are using.
And so Facebook, I mean, for us was just the great divide. As soon as, you know, my mom and my grandpa are both on Facebook. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's
not necessarily a divider.
It used to be. I mean, Facebook when it first came out was just for college campuses.
Right.
Now it's like this huge. Everybody has one.
Right.
So,
but it tends to be like the almost like the general melting pot for the other social media.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool. That was fun. Social networking.
Okay, so you just moved up to LA.
Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been there now?
I've been there 8 weeks.
8 weeks.
8 weeks.
Okay.
LA.
So you're still kind of an LA baby.
I hate it, but I'm a baby. I give it time.
Yeah, I'm interested because you're not originally from San Diego. You moved down here in...
I moved down here in 2003 for soccer in college, and then I kind of just got acclimated, and I just got used to San Diego. This was just kind of
right.
home,
right.
really. I fit in, and in San Jose, I didn't feel like I was
that's
home. So. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I moved to L.A., and I think the biggest reason I don't like it is in San Diego, everybody gets along. There's no hierarchy. There's no, you know, whatever. We're all kind of cool. You know, I can go talk to Gregory Page, and he's going to be cool with me, and I can go talk to Steve Pultz. He's going to be, you know, a rad.
Right.
Or, you know, I could go to an open mic and talk to any of them. It's going to be the same interaction. In L.A., there's this huge, like, everybody is... It's like a chessboard, and everybody's playing this game,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like everybody that I meet is just wanting me to be a stepping stone. Oh, man, yeah, you're the San Diego guy. I want to come down and play the stats with you. Man, that would be great. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, it's cool. I just wanted to say that was a good song. You know, and it's like immediately, like, everybody is plotting and planning what their next turn is and how they're going to use you for their own profit.
Right.
And the hustle is cool. I mean, it's fun to see, you know, people that would, like, lay out in the street for their music and just stand in the middle and stop the freeway, you know, just so people will, you know, they'll get 3 seconds of fame on the news and sell a couple CDs.
Which just happened.
Which it just happened, right? Yeah. And you know, San Diego, everyone's really laid back. So I think there's a drive there that is sort of lacking here. I feel like there's a lot of people that here... are think that they're like Elvis, like it's just going to happen for them, it's just going to fall on their lap.
Right.
And in LA, you know, everybody takes every chance, every opportunity. They think everything's a big deal and they go at it. So the other thing that I think is different is in San Diego, everybody seems happy. It's a genuine happiness. In LA, you can just tell people are just smiling and their frown wrinkles are just like popping out of their smiles. You know, it's just a city full of people that are hurting. I know. Yeah, it's really sad. Like I was there like 2 days and I had already seen like so many out of work actors and actresses that are just like so depressed that it was just, it's very tough because you can just see it in their faces and the way they're walking that right. They're empty. They're looking to be like fulfilled by this career or whatever. And
right.
So it's interesting to me that people in San Diego, we kind of walk with our heads up. We're kind of, you know, got a pep to our step, and maybe we're not, you know, the biggest sensation, you know, going on right now, but we know that we can, you know, do a good show, and it doesn't matter if there's two people at our show or, you know, 50, we're going to put on a good performance.
Right.
And I really think that that's the difference between San Diego and LA.
Okay, so San Diego makes you feel personally fulfilled in the honest, heartfelt reasons as to why you do what you do. And it sounds like LA helps feed that side of you which wants the challenge. You want to right. be challenged. You don't want, just want to lay back, go grab a burrito, grab a guitar and just go and play an open mic.
Right.
You actually feel challenged to achieve more than you necessarily would in LA.
Yeah, and I think that the best way to explain it is you know, I'm a San Diego artist living in LA. Like, I feel like I've got a dual residency. Like, you know, I pretty much go there for work and then I come here to live, you know, I know I don't technically live here, but my mind's always here, I guess. It's really funny, come home to San Diego and watch the news and be like, they're talking about San Diego on the news. And then I'm like, wait, I'm in San Diego. And it's all throwing me off, like between, you know, being here and there. But, LA is, I get, everybody gets along with me in LA because I'm so laid back and I'm so chill.
Wow.
And everybody in San Diego can't stand me because I'm so rigid and so, you know, structured and so ready for the next gig. And so it's really funny that I'm somewhere between the middle of those two cultures is where I kind of lie. I'm not, I've never like really screwed anyone over in music, and I don't have a plan on it. You know, I pay the people that come and open for me and this and that way better than myself sometimes. But in the end, like, I'm still kind of hard-nosed and kind of don't, you know, put up with anything. If someone's going to, you know, badmouth me or my music, I'll get them back, you know? So mm-hmm. It's just, you know, how I roll. Right. I don't really just let things roll off my back like most San Diegans do.
Doormat.
Yeah, like I'm not like just, you know, gonna let anybody say whatever they want without, you know, me saying something back. It, like most San Diegans would just let it go,
mm-hmm.
and in LA, you know, they get you before you say it. So it's really somewhere in the middle.
So basically, you belong in San Clemente.
Basically, I belong in Vista. I think somewhere either Vista or Long Beach.
Can I ask a question about LA real quick? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, we like you.
Oh, they really like me. You know, I have friends who have moved from San Diego to go try their hand in different towns. My good friend Mike just moved to Nashville to try playing guitar there. Barbara Nesbitt's recently moved to Austin. You moved to Los Angeles. And it, over the years, I've seen a lot of that. And it's worked for some people and it hasn't worked for others. Do you think that there's... The question I have is, by moving to Los Angeles, do you think it unlocks things that, say, someone who just goes up there once a week to play gigs from San Diego is not going to be privy to because they're just not from there? I mean, is it that clicky? Are there things you have to be there for to be able to take advantage of?
You know, it really, I think, depends on your goals. I mean, it really depends on what you want to do. I want to perform on bigger platforms, bigger stages, you know, really get out and tour and do that stuff. And most of the labels that would be able to help me do that don't reside in San Diego as much. So therefore, that's where my networking needs to take place, and that's where I need to meet people, is where music happens. Now, I was even told that music's not even happening in LA anymore. Now it's just you have to go to Nashville. Everything gets touched by Nashville. But the other thing is that I want to write for other artists as well. I just got my first cut. I can't talk about it yet because it hasn't been pressed, but it's you know, up with three Diane Warren tracks that are, it's going to be a big thing for me, and it wouldn't happen if I wasn't in LA.
Okay.
You know, so it really, you know, as far as like I could easily stay in San Diego and play gigs here, but the market is so small. Once I moved to LA and realized how many people were in LA, it made me feel like all of the, you know, dumb drama and all the goofy stuff that goes on behind the scenes here in San Diego of, oh man, I'm playing a gig tonight. Oh, you know, Berkeley Heart's playing a gig right down the street, you know, and it's like, oh, well, which show are my fans going to go to? Oh, they're going to go to Berkeley Heart's? Oh, well, whatever. I don't care about those fans.
Well, they're all going to go to Gregory Page's
show. Oh, well, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Fans and our fans.
Well, every night of the week.
Every and, Thursday.
And so it's just, I mean, that's when I realized, oh, you know, in L.A., there's so many people to draw from
right.
that, like, but it's crazy.
I get that. That was my next question. My follow-up is, do you think that you give up a little bit of the, do you think it's easier to be in that huge pond surrounded by, let's face it, a lot of really crappy stuff. I mean, there's crap everywhere, but in those big places like that, there's an awful lot of white noise that you have to cut through. Do you feel that there, or do you feel like you're able to do that because you're talented and your stuff's good and you get up on stage and you're immediately able to get people's attention? Or do you feel like you gave up a little bit of that big fish in a small pond thing that we get here in San Diego if we're able to pull off a good show and write cool songs and stuff, you know? I mean,
yeah.
How's that working for you?
There's so many ways to answer it because it's I've thought about it nonstop since I moved up there. The day that I announced that I was kind of going to LA, I got an email from a kid who's a singer-songwriter here, kind of chewing me out, telling me, you know, I would kill to be as big as you are in San Diego, and you're letting it all go. And I was like, you know, I didn't email him back. I just, you know, thought
it
was
a give us the name.
I'm not going to say his name. He'll probably listen to this, and he'll know. But I was just kind of like, you know, if I wanted to be, you know, Mr. San Diego or something like that, you know, that would be fine. But Steve Poltz already has it. So what am I going to do, you know, that he can't do around me?
Right.
So I really was kind of just like, I moved up there and you're right. I realized that LA is not as scary as I thought it was going to be as far as like I thought everybody was talented. And then I got up there and everybody's mediocre. I mean, it's really like there's a reason that they're not big yet. And you know, I think it's kind of like an Aerosmith thing. You know, I have worked my butt off in San Diego. I've learned through experiences and shows on what to do when, you know, you get heckled right. or what to do when things happen. And so it's almost like going from, I don't want to say minor leagues, but kind of, you know, graduating to another level of where the producers are so hard on you. If you can't catch them in your first song, they're out of your building.
Right.
And so that honestly to me was the biggest challenge, and I think that I learned how to beat that challenge by playing in San Diego so much. And the other thing is that like I don't really claim LA as much as I claim Southern California now.
Sure.
Like so, all my Facebook and everything, like all the people, I met like two or three people last week who were like, "Yeah, I haven't seen you around much." I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know, I live in LA now." They're like, "What? You live in LA?" I was like, "Yeah, I moved there in December."
Yeah.
And so people don't really know. I mean, I still feel like I'm still in San Diego in most of their minds, so I didn't really lose anything by driving 2 hours north. So.
Right. As great as it is to be known in San Diego, the community that surrounds us here is passionate and awesome. There is a ceiling. You have to eventually go outside of San Diego to make that next step.
Yeah.
And whether you move to a place or whatever, I guess I'm wondering, do you feel like you could have done it by not moving there? Or is it just easier to do since you're there? It's in your backyard. You can go out every night instead of not being up there. And I mean,
yeah, it goes back to the social networking stuff. I think that you can become an overnight sensation wherever you are.
Okay, that's our third Josh D'Amigo tip of the podcast. But this one kind of has an asterisk with it because, you know, you can become an overnight sensation from anywhere. But it's just easier to do in some places than it is than others, as he's about to go on to explain. And there's all sorts of different ways to do it, not just the way he's about to explain, but you get the point.
With American Idol, you know, you can literally audition in your city and immediately you're, you know, opening for big names and you never ever did a gig. You never did anything. You just, you know, happened to be at the right place at the right time. And San Diego is a city where I could easily just, you know, stay here and keep playing Lestat's and keep playing, you know, bigger venues, play the Casbah, play all these places and it would be totally fine, and it could totally work out that way. But I think that I have met more people and had more breakfasts and lunches and this and that with different music executives and music people in LA. I've made more connections in the last 6 to 8 weeks than I've ever made in San Diego in, you know, a year. And it's just there's so many people there that the amount of people that can help you and want to know you and want to get to know your music, that can actually do things and push it to the right people, kind of increases your chances if you're doing something good. So I think that's the biggest thing in LA. Other than that, just going up and playing a gig in LA doesn't mean you're going to meet anyone.
Right.
So,
but you think the cream can rise to the crop up there, to the top up there. The cream can rise to the top up there still. It doesn't get kind of covered up by white noise. And,
yeah,
and you can still find good stuff going on up there.
It takes some time, yeah. But I mean, you got to look at like Tony Luca, Jay Nash, Chris, I can't remember his last name, but like some of these guys are up there and they're phenomenal, and they play and it blows people away, and it's no different than, you know, the way that people do it down here. It's just that when you blow somebody away in LA, there's a chance that they're gonna, you know, fund you or, you know, sign you or something like that.
So do you think it's a proximity effect?
Yeah. I mean,
do you think that maybe San Diego kind of falls so much in the shadow, perceptually, not necessarily actually, as you're saying, but there's sort of that shadow there, that because I think San Diego is a great town. I think it's a great place to learn, to cut your teeth, to really have a have an audience who wants to get out, they want to hear music, and they're genuinely nice people. But
yeah.
Do you think it suffers in that shadow?
I think that there are a lot of garbage bands that make it big in other cities that. The reason that they have made it big is because there's not a whole lot around them.
And, right.
I mean, we are kind of in the shadow of LA, but at the same time, with bands like the Soft Pack, with bands like Transfer, mm-hmm. the Silent Comedy, that are coming out of San Diego, suddenly people are looking at us. We're literally the vacation spot of all the execs. Like, they all own a house in LA, and then they drive to San Diego.
Hollywood,
like,
on holiday.
That's what they love about us. And so, I mean, it's a good place. It's just a little bit better up there. I mean, really, you move to LA to move out. You only move to LA to make it, and then you get as far away from that place as you possibly can. And that's what everybody says. And honestly, like, I really think that San Diego is special. It's got a lot of special things, and you can, you know, go to one concert and hear three different types of music at Lestat's. You can go up and hear me play like kind of a country rock thing, and then you can hear Rob D's rap, and then you can hear a Jason Mraz. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but, you know, someone that sounds mrazmatazzed. You know, it's just you know, there's so many different types of music, and it's all just a person and a guitar, and that's what we have here, is that everybody's kind of doing their own interpretation of music, and it all sounds amazing. I really think that there's more talent per person, and this is a conversation I have with Aaron Bowen all the time. This city is just, they don't know how good they are, they just, mm-hmm. half of them don't have the drive,
right?
And so that's the difference between you know, somebody that's more LA, is they are willing to go the extra mile, and that's kind of what
right.
you need, I think.
But, so. And if we had a Hollywood sitting next to Kensington and North Park, where the whole industry was right here, some of those people that didn't have the drive might get discovered just on accident or whatever, but we don't have that here in this town. It's not, like you said, the proximity effect is a big deal about LA.
How many like actors and actresses actually made it by working their way up? Like, there's a lot, but the Bruce Willises that, you know, were bartenders, and somebody was like, dude, you would be great in this movie, and boom, he's a big star. You know, someone's pumping gas. I think it was like Mariah Carey or something was pumping gas, and all of a sudden someone heard her, and boom, she got a record deal.
That's,
you know,
it's
but that one in a million is in LA. It's not so much in San Diego.
And that's something that I wrestle with as an idea, with a lot of the reality stuff. You know, you were talking about the sort of the American the idol effect, if you will, where, you know, people go and audition, and, you know, there's a lot of drama and a lot of fake drama that surrounds that, which makes that interesting to, you know, a general audience. But I mean, I kind of like the difference of being an artist or seeing an artist who it's that's their lifeblood. I mean, that's what they love. It's what they're passionate about. They wake up in the morning, and even if they're going to work at a crappy job that they don't like, they're still thinking about it all day, and then they can't wait to get out at night. I feel like there's a difference between those people and the true heart behind the success in music than there is somebody who's just trying to get their 5 to 10 to 15 minutes of fame through a manufactured environment.
Yeah, and I think, like, to go along with that, like, there's the work ethic and the everything. I mean, when you wake up and you want to write, like, how many musicians do we know have great hooks in a song and the rest of the song is garbage because they won't rewrite it or they won't, you know, do the work again?
All right, Josh D'Amigo, point number 4 of the podcast, editing. It's so important in songwriting to edit our songs or our poems or our movies or our whatever. You know, you don't always get it right the first time. Maybe you get a great line or a really hooky great chorus, like Josh said, but why stop there? Why not make the verses the best verses ever written and the coolest bridge or the coolest refrain, or, you know, come up with some chord maybe that you never tried before? Just stretch it out, man. Writers write. Artists make art. Keep it up.
Like, I've heard so many songs here that I'm like, dude, that is fantastic. That's a great idea. And then the second verse and you're like, what? Like, what happened? You know, like, it's to me, like, the people that are really going to make stuff happen are the ones that are going to suck their pride and just keep working and keep working and keep working. I mean,
Or deflate their ego.
I can't even start to tell you, like, the nicknames I've had for... I was called the Ox in college and soccer because I'm ugly, but I work hard is really where that nickname
came
from.
False modesty, Josh. Stop it.
Get out of here. and then I think, I don't remember, but there was somebody that put on my, like, a comment on either YouTube or, like, iTunes or something. It said, Josh D'Amigo, kind of a moderate singer-songwriter, but he works harder than anybody I've ever seen. And, you know, but because I work harder than everybody else, I mean, this is 2006, it's slowly I'm getting better to where I think some of the songs that I'm writing now blow the doors off of Pocket Change. I mean, I'm not talking absolutely about Baby Cats and, you know, wrong grammar and you know, I three verses and, it, you know, it's all kind of more structured now and it's all, I can tell if something's cliche or not. And so that comes from literally writing every day and working on listening to new music and finding new inspirations. And so, I mean, as you grow, as you're working harder, you just tend to grow naturally better.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great quote. I don't know exactly the source of it, but amateurs wait for inspiration. Professionals get up and do it. You know, they get up and write, they get up and play music, they do it as they would a job. Yeah. And you can't but help naturally evolve.
Yeah.
You know, you know, if you actually do that, you're not just sitting there waiting for the
My grandpa always said, you can work hard or you can work smart. One of them is going to be better than the other. And I kind of adapted and have made my own thing that I'm going to work harder and I'm going to work smarter than anybody else I see. And if I see somebody working harder than me, I'm going to work harder. If I see someone working smarter than me, I'm going to work smarter. It's just, I literally adapt all of my ideas and all of my strategies off of what I see other people doing. And, you know, when I first got here, there were two people that I looked at their MySpace pages and I designed it after. And it was John Hull and I don't want to get his name wrong. He now lives in Arizona. John Mayer sounding.
Kyle Phelan?
Kyle Phelan.
Yeah, okay.
Those two guys were the first ones that I looked at for how I was going to design my stuff. And then from there, I was going to say, okay, I need these many people. I need 700 fans on MySpace. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be at their level. And, you know, then I looked at the next person. And then I looked at the next person. That's really is where I've figured out what I'm doing is just looking at what everybody else is and taking it to the next level and doing that. So
I do that with you on Twitter.
Oh, do you? And yeah, I tweet too much, but you don't. It's a fine line. You don't want to. You don't want to overdo it, but at the same time, you want to be engaging and fun. And I've definitely erased stupid statuses on a regular basis where I go, I shouldn't tweet this. So it's funny, but I'm at 10,000 something now. It's disgusting.
And you mentioned Nashville.
Yes.
And you've had experience in Nashville.
I have.
We talked about LA. Tell us about Nashville.
Nashville is hard to read people because everybody has an accent. And so they all sound saying? Like your best friends. They all you can't read them. There's something about you have obviously a British accent. There's something about a Southern accent that just gets me. Like it's like a home cooked meal, and I cannot get past their accent. I went and played at the Foundry, which is this great, great club, and I don't have a clue how I got in because I didn't have a draw in Nashville, and I met so many people, and I was handing out cards, and I was like, man, this show is going to be great. And I went and played the Foundry to two people, and I was just like, I hate Nashville, like, because everyone told me they were coming. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it's so, to me, I mean, I was only there a week, and it's that city is very much like as sweet as possible. Mm-hmm. And will tell you that you are the best singer-songwriter and their mind is somewhere else. Like, they don't care about you at all. And it's kind of the same as L.A., but they've got a tan and they've got a
Are you quoting Sean Mullins?
I am. I just did. I was like, wait a second. I just quoted Sean Mullins. I mean, it's really
like Nashville with a tan.
What I've found in LA, even, and probably this is just how the music business is, and I'm realizing it, is everybody is your best friend up until they find out how much money you have in your bank account.
All right, this is tip number 5, folks. The sharks are in the water. They're everywhere, and you got to look out. You know, just be smart and be careful and ask around. And well, Josh will go on to explain.
Because I have met so many producers that are like so excited to talk to me, and I've listened to all your stuff. I have your album Raw on my iTunes. Man, Shooting for the Sun's a great song. Oh man, and I saw you open for this guy and this guy and this guy. And then as soon as I go, cool, you know, I'm looking for someone to help me with a new record. They're like, great, what's your budget? I overdrafted buying breakfast this morning, and so I don't have a budget. Oh, that's cool. All right, man. Well, I'll call you next week. And man, they're gone. I mean, it's literally, and that's Nashville. That's L.A. It's New York. It's
everywhere. It's here in San Diego too.
In San Diego, and it's just that is what my impression of Nashville was when I first got there, is that like everybody's really, really sweet, but they're still business, you know. And so I got out there. CSAC drove me around because I'm with them for royalties and everything. And they took me to the Sony building and introduced me to all these, you know, executives and stuff. And it was so awesome to be like, wow, this is where I walked into a recording studio and Alabama's in there. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, this is what? Darius Rucker is backstage, right. You know. And I felt like if I moved to Nashville, I was just going to be excited about seeing other people being big. I mean, I saw a band play that Sister Hazel, mm-hmm. and I got to go backstage and meet them, and I was like, dude, wow, Nashville, all the stars come here, like this is good. And then I realized I don't want to see all the stars, I don't want to go to concerts, I want to be them. And if I move to Nashville, I'm just going to get stuck like all these other people that just kind of name drop and talk about all the concerts they went to. Mm-hmm. And so that was why Nashville wasn't the right fit for me, is the combination of not being able to read people very well and feeling like I was just going to be a gawker. I was just going to be like with my jaw dropped all the time saying like, whoa, look at this guy. He's done so much. And whoa, look at this guy. So to me, it was like, I need to go somewhere else where I'm not going to be stuck in that kind of a mindset. And that was...
There seems to be in Nashville and L.A., you mentioned they're both similar. There's, you talked about those people that come up and, you know, try and fish for how much money you're ready to spend with them. And there seems to be an infrastructure. Even San Diego's starting to get like this a little bit. There's an infrastructure of all sorts of different kinds of people who are ready to take money off of artists.
I agree.
You know, and man, I can tell you from being in the recording business in this town, artists don't have any money.
No.
And like, you know, like the best records I make, I don't make any money on those. They're just because that's what the way it is here. And it's not, nobody can get a fair shake in those worlds in those bigger cities, it seems to me, because there's this infrastructure of people who just are there to make money off of these
right.
poor artists.
And right.
take money off people who might have one shot with this little bit of money they have, and they end up blowing it because, you know, whatever. So
in the end, I mean, that's the, you know, the goal that everybody has is to make money off of their art. But, you know, it's maybe not everybody has that goal, but at the same time, you have to survive. You have to pay your bills. You have to, you know, you have responsibilities and this and that. And I think for me, the final goal is to be able to pay off, you know, college student loans and to buy a house. And it doesn't have to be big, but as long as I'm surviving and I'm getting to do music, like, I feel spoiled. So, yeah, so it's...
So do you think that the fact that artists can't generally afford whatever is being, you know, pushed their way is any... question upon their professionalism?
It depends. I mean, it's kind of a case-by-case scenario. Like, you really, like, if you look at the people like Aaron Bowen that are just flat-out talented, I mean, that can just sit and just play some ridiculous chord that is he just made up, you know, like, and it just goes together, and he just, whatever, and he's so happy in his little hat and his, like, you know, old shoes and his, you know, Beatles t-shirt from the 60s, and then you go and look at somebody that's got, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're making this big record and, you know, whatever, and it just doesn't seem right, you know? It's like, you see all these wicked talented people who don't, you know, get bigger than, you know, whatever, you know, city they're in. And then you see these Paris Hiltons who, you know, put out a single based on the fact that they had money and they could afford it. And so, I mean, really, that's, it's not, it depends on what your final goal is. I mean, really, if you're doing music because you love music, that's how it's going to end up.
Right.
But if you're doing music because you want to be famous and this and that, which is you know, what a lot of people do, you're going to have money to back that up or get really, really lucky. One of the best things, when I played with Sean Mullins a couple weeks ago, that he wrote on a poster for me is be lucky.
And this is our next tip. Sort of self-explanatory, but also not. I mean, luck is one thing. Another thing is getting yourself in the right position, in the right place, to be ready for luck to come along. In a lot of ways, we create our own luck. We create our own bad luck, too.
You know, everybody's good. I mean, everybody's talented. Everybody can do something that's cool. But unless you're incredibly lucky, you don't get to share it to as many people. So, I mean, he was living in a van. He had already released 9 CDs before they came and found him and Lullaby came out. You know, honestly, like, when he's sitting there telling me a story, I'm just sitting there like, what? Like, that's crazy, you know? And, you know, he's, you know, Lullaby comes out and all of a sudden everybody loves him. And now he's back at work and he's got a new song called Light You Up that's, like, crazy good. But people only know him for Lullaby, so it's really funny, and most people think it's called Rockabye. So it's like he's one of the guys that when I met him, I was just like, what? Like, because he is a good old boy from Georgia, Atlanta, and he doesn't even bring his wallets to shows, so I ended up having to pay the bill when we went out for dinner. You know, it's just like, and he's, you know, Sean Mullins, I mean, everybody, you know, knows that song, so it's interesting how you can be that mindset and make it big, or you can be not of that mindset and make it big. It's just about being at the right place at the right time, but you can increase your chances by being in places like LA, Nashville, Chicago.
Sometimes you can be making it big and not realize it's happening because you thought it would look or feel a different way.
And that's the best. I think I like hanging out with people like that. When you know how good you are, there's something that's taken away from how good you are. Like, I mean, if you are walking around and you're like, yeah, check me out. Like, you know, I've got so many followers on Twitter. Or, yeah, you know, I just, you know, my album went, you know, platinum in, you know, 10 minutes. You know, and you walk around with that, you know, Kanye West kind of, you know, whatever. People don't want to be around that. I mean, yeah, sure, you know, they like you for being famous, but that's about it. And I think that the people that I like to meet are the people that are doing great things, but are still like San Diegans. I mean, Kerry Brothers, LA artist. I did an article on him for a website, and you know, we talked about burritos almost the entire time during the interview.
That's so weird.
And
I interviewed him too a couple of years ago, and like half of it was about burritos.
Yeah, and it's honestly like he's one of the guys that I was like, dude, this guy is a total San Diegan.
Yeah.
And there's something about being a San Diegan and having a San Diego mindset that like is so attractive to me. Like, I just want to be around those people that are fantastic, and they don't care if they're making money playing or not. They just want to play. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, I need to make money, so it's a little like my mindset's a little different, but it's funny.
So, I mean, it's, really it goes down to whatever your definition of success is. And I like to think that success is a highly personal thing. I don't think it's some great golden chalice which is immovable and you know, you either get it or you don't.
Yeah. If you are so hung up on awards, and if you're so hung up on placements and how many times you open for artists, like, you miss it. You miss music.
And that's our last tip. Don't miss it. It's all out there, and it's happening all around you all the time. It's a great life if you know just the right things to look for and what real success is all about.
The point of music is to make people feel, is to laugh and to cry and to display that emotion for someone else and to tell stories. And yeah, you can make money off of that, but if that's your main focus and you can't get back to the song when it's time to get to the song, there's something lost there. And to me, like, that's probably the one thing nobody can say anything about me is that I can take a song that I've written and make you feel exactly the same way that I was when I wrote it. I've got a song called LA's Not My Home that I just got critiqued by my buddy Seth Coombs over at the City Beat. And I wrote it, and, you know, every time I play it, I go back to that couch in my ex-girlfriend's apartment where she's talking about all the people she's meeting, and I'm just like, I'm not from here. I don't belong here. And everyone in the audience can see that that's where I go. When I play Crazy and it's about my two best friends' wedding, you know, the second I start playing it, I see them dancing in the corner of the room. It doesn't matter what venue it is, but I go back to their wedding and I see them having their first dance, and I see the first time that I've ever seen those two cry, because they're both, like, you know, weightlifters and, like, knuckleheads. But it's like, you write a song from so much passion and so much whatever that no matter what San Diego Music Award you get, because you have you know, more family members voting for you than other artists, no matter what hat awards you get, even if nobody knows your name before you walk up, if you can't go back at the end of the day and play one song that makes you feel something, then you've missed music.
Well, that's it. Special thanks to Tim Mudd and Liz Abbott and Josh D'Amigo, everyone at the San Diego Troubadour, everyone here at Berkeley Sound. I want to say thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening, and we'll see you next month on the next San Diego Troubadour Tapes podcast. Bye.
The Troubadour Tapes.
I had a goose, and the goose pleased me.
Bang down, you hit town, Julie.
Woman's only human.
One less set of footsteps on your floor.
Never saw my hometown till I stayed away too long.
Heart and heart.
I'm a happy boy.
The Troubadour Tapes.
Two and a three.
Berkeley.
Berkeley Sound.
Give me back my
Berkeley. BerkeleySound.com
Berkeley Sound.